Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Does art have the power to change the world? The notion that exposure to art can spark new ways of thinking and understanding that might indirectly inspire behavior is not a new one. But what if art went beyond representing ideas and actually embodied them? The organization known as MAP, an acronym for Make Art with Purpose, is working as a virtual resource center for artists interested in helping audiences reach beyond their roles as passive observers and participate directly in building connected, vital communities. KERA's Stephen Becker explains in this report.
By the early 1990s, Janiel Engelstad's career was already on the rise. She'd earned an MFA in photography from NYU. Her work was included in gallery shows. But as her professional life was taking off, she began volunteering, teaching photography to homeless kids. She got hooked on the combination of art and social activism.
I was in a group show where I had three straight photographs. And it wasn't that I didn't feel the sense of accomplishment. I felt like I was showing something I was no longer connected to, and it didn't make sense for me.
Engelstad decided to shift her focus to social art, and she's become a force in the growing field, creating work around the world and lecturing at universities. She's lived in Dallas for more than a decade, and now she's finally taking on a major venture in her adopted hometown. Engelstad has recruited artists from North Texas and around the world for Make Art with Purpose, a collection of art projects that addresses issues as varied as domestic violence, immigration, gentrification, and environmental concerns. Morishin Aliari is a new media artist and visiting assistant professor at UTD. She moved to the U.S. from Iran in 2007, but her homeland's history of censorship has stayed with her. For the last 3 years, she's been working on an online video performance art piece in which she teaches viewers how to censor.
Also, sometimes when you're using black markers, it doesn't work, so you want to make sure that you use the black paint, so it's completely censored.
Later this month, Aliari will explore censorship with a live audience for her contribution to MAP. At UTD, visitors will watch a similar performance piece and be asked for their feedback.
It's not just about a person coming and seeing a performance. It's really about community building. It's about getting the people who are there or who are like interested in topics like this to participate. And if they don't know much about it, think deeper.
Jenya Huang, another Dallas artist, will also explore a personal topic with her MAP project. After a difficult divorce, she wanted to connect with others who needed help healing. Engelstad introduced her to Human Rights Initiative of North Texas, which provides legal services for immigrants who are victims of violent crimes. She's created a series of abstract photographs paired with quotes she recorded while interviewing the victims. One piece also captures her own experience.
What we're looking at is an abstract portrait of a woman. The main words are his words were like swords. And that's in all caps. And then the text that's written is, even though he never laid a hand on me, I felt like this every day.
Huang says the immigrant stories and their strength of spirit has helped her to heal. She's donating her photographs to Human Rights Initiative.
Bringing this citywide, it's the ripples and the waves we all have longed for as artists, our lives, you know, so we were born to do this.
Stephen Becker, KERA News.
Joining us now to discuss the ideas and impact of making art with purpose is artist and curator Janiel Engelstad, who you also just heard in Stephen's preview story. Janiel, welcome to Think.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit more about this. I mean, the idea that art inspires is an old one, as I said earlier, but this goes beyond simply feeling an emotion and allowing that to be enough.
Right. I think the one of the main, let's call it a foundation of this kind of work, is community engagement and inviting the community members in, not only to observe art or to experience art as in a shape, but to really participate as makers, as people who have an opinion, as co-creators. So that's one of the things that is really important.
It sort of changes where the act of making art happens, too, rather than in isolation. The art only becomes what it is once the audience is there.
Process is really important. The process is as important as the end result, and a lot can happen during the process. One of the projects for MAP was is in partnership with the Dallas Museum of Art, and I began conversations with Susan Diachizen over a year ago about how we might collaborate together. She's the director of Center for Creative Connections, and they have engaged community in a number of different ways. And we were talking about how maybe the center could connect with MAP's network. We have a network of artists from around the world that are on our website that are engaging these issues through their practice, environmental issues, social issues. And we had a couple ideas, and we were co-creating and co-developing these ideas. And we kept, over a series of months, this was going on also while the Dallas Museum of Art was reevaluating its mission and returning to free admission. And over that time, that process is really what drove the final project, which is a woman and one man from an organization called Avance. It's a local organization that outreaches to the Hispanic community, came in June and July to the museum, and myself, along with C3 staff, worked with them to help them identify a piece of art, and as a result, they've created the first ever Spanish, bilingual Spanish-English guide to specific pieces of art in the collection. And it's the process that got us there. And then the process of having those participants come in for 2 months and watch them grow and change and then bring in their community members and form a relationship with the museum. So that in itself is the art, and it's just, I would say in this case, maybe more important than even the guide.
So the idea is that like these folks from Avance are not people who are, these are not art historians. These are individuals who developed an interest and wanted to take part in this.
Exactly. And they're bringing in knowledge and experience, ideas that have historically been undervalued and underrepresented. And that is really the job of MAP and the job of artists working in social practice is to connect and tap into that, those other knowledges, if you will, life experiences, and build relationships with that.
The partnerships you have here are really interesting because you have community groups and NGOs, and then you have traditional arts organizations like museums, which is fascinating because we've sort of been told, perhaps incorrectly, that the only art that matters will either end up in a museum or will be sold for a very large amount of money by a gallery somewhere. And this sort of requires letting that drop and looking at the value of art in an entirely different way with an entirely different set of rules.
Right. The value isn't measured in what something can get at an auction or in the piece itself, or the value is in is more tangible, and it's in the experience of the impact on the community. And it doesn't mean that it doesn't have to be measured, because it does, and sometimes, especially because this kind of work is made through getting grants, and you have to be responsible to the people who are funding this work and show that it is doing what you intend it to do. So it is, there is a value that I personally use borrow from the social sciences measuring devices, but it's not traditional, and it's certainly not what the blue chip art world would recognize as value, but that's changing. Go ahead.
Is it changing after a fight? I mean, has that been a controversy?
No, I don't think it's a fight as much as an evolution.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. It's an evolution.
Is it two entirely separate tracks, or is there a relationship between what, as you say, the blue chip art world values and what the world of social practice values?
I think it's two tracks that are beginning to intertwine. And that the museum and gallery world is starting to recognize the value of this. But that's not to say historically they haven't dipped into it.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, social practice has grown out of something that we call for a long time community art. And that goes back deep into communities in this country. And it even, if you look at the German artist Joseph Beuys from the 1960s, he developed a practice called social sculpture. And his idea was that everybody is an artist and everybody can make art. So it has these roots that have connections. Boyce is exhibited in museums throughout the world and is considered one of the great artists. So these connections are there historically. But we're in a time of need, and things are changing, I think, as a result of issues like climate change and immigration and the economic meltdown, that the artist's response to this is suddenly being taken more seriously.
What's the value of encouraging people who don't think of themselves as artists to participate actively in the creation of a work?
Well, there's personal growth and personal evolution and joy, and those things are really important. I was on a panel discussion last week with Rick Lowe, who is well known as a social practice artist. He has Project Row Houses in Houston, and he's probably one of the most well-known practitioners in the world. And someone asked him about measuring the value, and he said, "How big is the smile?" And he was serious. And so this is really getting at real simple things to our human essence, joy.
Project Row Houses, can you explain those?
So Project Row Houses was started by Rick several years ago. He's going on 20 years if he hasn't reached 20 years. And it was a response to a need in the community in Houston. And he created a house for showing art and engaging community, and it's grown into several city blocks where people live. There's a health clinic. People can learn how to get skills for job training. There's daycare. There's art events, and it's really a vibrant community.
So it's interesting because that raises the question: if being spearheaded by an artist, those things become a form of art. Does that mean that regular daycares and health clinics are a kind of art without ever having recognized it?
I think you could argue that. The art comes in really in the maker, but it's also interesting because trained as an artist, you go along this track of being an artist, but at some point, if you leave the studio and you leave the object making behind, you kind of leave the identity of an artist behind too. And the vehicle of the museum and the gallery become a way to help produce these projects and building partnerships with other organizations that have agency, such as NGOs or community organizations or civic government. Then you're able to create a way for things to happen that might not otherwise happen.
When you first began to approach the people who are now your partners in the organizations, did they get what you were trying to do right away?
Yeah, I'm usually pretty successful at that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's partly because I really believe in what I'm doing. I deliver what I say, although it can change because during that process and working with people, different ideas come in and you continually have to make adaptions and listen and respond to that. But if they don't get it, then it's not the right partnership and it doesn't happen.
My guest is Janiel Engelstad. She's an artist, curator, and founding director of Make Art with Purpose. MAP 2013 is a festival and exhibition that will be taking place at various locations in North Texas through November 24th. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call us. The number is 1-800-933-5372. You can send email to think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. with more than 40 classes starting in October, from landscape painting to intelligent investing on the Dallas and Plano campuses. smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with the founding director of Make Art with Purpose, Janiel Engelstad. There's a festival and exhibition called MAP 2013 that will be taking place at various locations in North Texas through November 24th. There are a number of projects and a number of partners featured. So tell us about some of the things that are happening right now that are ongoing in the month of October.
Okay, so MAP began with two events this week. We have an artist named James Reed who worked with students at Eastfield College on Monday in a project called Agents of Change. It's a response to climate change that's different than you might think of. He spends time with the participants in a workshop asking them to consider their own feelings and their own concerns related to the issue. It involves deep listening. It involves conversation. It involves sharing. It involves creating a space for that. And then he has kits that he's designed that. Now, James, just to say, was also trained as a traditional artist before he went to do this. And he has kits that are they're life preservers, and they're measuring sticks that show the sea level in 2107. The 3-meter rise. Mm-hmm. And you don these kits, and kids walked out to the pond at Eastfield and had a half hour to write what came up for them, their concerns in the response. So you might think, how is that art? Or you might think, what happened? Or how has this changed? That's another question I get a lot. Why do you talk about change? And it was a creative experience that brought change that was really evidence from the beginning of the workshop to the end when we regathered in the classroom and talked about the experience and the shift in people's opinions and the openings and their own ideas about how they could be creative people. And one person even said that, I realize that I can make decisions, that I have choices that I didn't realize I had this morning. Hmm. Another project is taking place also at a university at UNT. And Green Meme are two artists, designers. They work a lot with scientific ideas, are developing a shade canopy and seating area in the new natural dye garden at UNT. And it's being woven out of natural fiber rope to mimic the dye garden, and it's also being dyed with students who with an indigo dye that also is the dye garden's just growing, so it's not directly from the garden, but it's from a plant that would be from the garden eventually. And the material has been recycled from another public art project that came down, so it's being repurposed and reused. And the students themselves are helping to co-create and co-design this. Green Meme comes in with some ideas, and then the students come in and they help to shape that, and they start the weaving. And this, like Mini Map projects, is a legacy program. So while some of the projects take place one time or one event, other projects are long-term, will leave something behind, and that's really important to the philosophy of the organization. And then finally, a couple other things happening this week is we have an exhibition going up called Living Condition, which is an installation at the Oak Cliff Cultural Center by two artists, D. Hibbert Jones and Nomi Talisman, where they've spent the last couple years investigating families who have a family member that's been condemned to capital punishment. Mm-hmm. And so they have someone living on death row. And looking at the impact of capital punishment on wider communities and the family that we never think of. We often think of the victim's family and see that. It's very much portrayed in the media. So they're taking another look at this, and that will be in this installation and also shown in an animated video that they did as part of Dallas Video Fest this Saturday up in Richardson at 3 o'clock.
So to the extent that you want some of these initiatives to be self-sustaining, so after the sort of
I guess after MAP is done, you want people to continue. You also welcome the idea that individuals who are involved might change these and evolve them along the way so that they morph into something a little bit different.
During the process of the project itself?
Well, I know that on your website you sort of offer ideas for people who want to engage and then say, and if you've done something else with this, please let us know.
Right, right. Yeah, that's really important because the work does fail and the work does change. And in that failure, there's success. So there's really no failure, but that's really worth examining, and that's something we do in the catalog. MAP's catalog will be out in a couple weeks. It documents all of the projects that are here in Dallas, but it also takes a wider look at social practice throughout the world. And one of the essays by Kat Lessard, an artist who often works in Africa, is about how her project has to continually change because she's addressing the dams that are being built and the division in communities and the flooding of ancient communities and their homelands and they're losing their plants and their rock art that have been around for decades and centuries. And so, but she's also working with an idea that's in response to something a government is doing. And so she has to continually adapt and change the project. And in that, you can find success, and there's information in that that's really valuable.
I think a lot of people respond to the idea that art shouldn't be a luxury. It should be available to everybody no matter what they earn. I wonder about the luxury of time to engage in art, which is something that, you know, you often hear about people who are working multiple jobs. As much as they might respond in a profound way, can't seem to find the time in their lives to do this. And I wonder if some of this social practice also helps to engage individuals because there may be a practical value along with the experience of the art.
That's something I haven't thought of. So I think the one thing about MAP is it's accessible across platforms. Mm-hmm. That makes it more available to people. So there's the internet, there's our Facebook page, which is very vital. It's a living thing that posts around art from around the world every day, what's going on with this practice and things that artists are doing. And I think that because you can respond as an audience that way, you can have a voice in it. And we encourage that, as you said, on our website. There's a way you can engage that you might not be able to engage if you can't get to the museum or you can't afford the ticket to an event. And all of MAP's events, that's another thing, are free, and they're available throughout the Metroplex in communities. And that's really important, is bringing art to communities, not expecting the community to come to the art. And so going out and having events, having projects right where the community members are.
Yeah, that's interesting too, because it sort of speaks to the idea that if you believe that everyone's life can be enhanced by art, you know, creators still have an obligation to make the art feel relevant to the people they're creating it for.
Oh, yeah. And that is true of social practice, and it's even probably would argue even more true. It's really important to make it relevant to the community. It's one thing to go into a community as an artist who is making public art and drop a sculpture there. It's another to go in and have 3 months of workshops and work with the community and say what commemorates your community, what's important to your community, getting those community members talking to each other. I did a project several years ago in Chicago, in Hyde Park, which is a really vibrant neighborhood with University of Chicago's there. More Nobel laureates live there than anywhere in the world. It's where a lot of historically, the Black African American community there is very vibrant in the arts. Jesse Jackson is from there, so it has a lot of personality. And I think I got the commission to do the I got the commission to do the public art piece because I had suggested I would come in and actually just hold workshops, and I held workshops for 4 months where I interviewed community members and then formed teams of members to talk about what a sculpture would be in that community that represented them. And they came in thinking that sculpture was George Washington on a horse. Hmm. That was their whole idea. And so we looked at a lot of sculpture, and we looked at all the ways that sculpture is represented. And then I had teenagers interview elders in the community and have conversations. And so the whole piece was shaped on that. And that is really vital to that kind of listening and that those conversations. And it's a learning experience for the artist who does that as well.
Yeah, talk about how that shaped your perception of the community and of what it means to serve a community with something like a public sculpture.
Well, my perception was shaped because it was an interesting time. This was shortly after 9/11. And so we had a lot of conversations around heroes. Mm-hmm. And I think I worked really closely with a group of about 20 teenagers on this. And we often think that teens idolize sports figures or music figures, or, you know, they're continually more involved in commercial aspects. And really, their heroes, and even I had that perception, and their heroes were their grandmothers and their teachers and the guy down the street who was, you know, an elder in the community and they had a relationship to. That stuff doesn't get a lot of play. That's not what we always read about. It doesn't sell as much. And that vibrancy of community is really alive and well in America.
I would imagine there are challenges for measuring that kind of success when a conversation that has begun within your workshop continues after you have sort of closed the classroom door and gone home for the night. How do you – is it important that somebody be keeping track of what happens in those, you know, conversations among friends at home or on the basketball court or somewhere else other than where the project itself has taken place?
That's hard to always is hard to do outside of the project itself. But this kind of work, in my own personal experience and many of the artists I know, you build relationships, and that's the other thing that this work is really about. It's about relationships. So in those relationships, you're actually start to become part of those people's life, and they become part of yours, and that has happened with countless individuals I've worked with. So it becomes easier to track that change. And also in terms of measuring, and when I'm talking about change, I want to say, I don't mean like all of a sudden we're not going to have gun violence or something like that. It's more subtle. It's about an individual's growth. It's about an individual evolution. Yeah, so that's I lost my track of my other comment.
But. Well, that's right. I think that's interesting because sometimes, you know, it is that sort of thing is harder to measure, and yet in the aggregate, a lot of people sort of just growing a little bit can make a difference in the way society responds to things.
Exactly, and it's a positive difference.
There's an interesting project on your website of a woman who I believe put something that looked like a real estate sign up in her mm-hmm. front yard, mm-hmm. And it just sparked conversations with the neighbors. I mean, it seems like such a small thing, and yet what a fascinating idea. Can you tell us about
that? Yeah, that's Rebecca Carter. She's a local artist, and this was in Oak Cliff in her house, and this grew out of her taking walks in her neighborhood. Rebecca is more of a traditional artist in terms she does drawing, she does thread drawing, she does video, and she doesn't work in what we would always call social practice. But she noticed taking walks in the neighborhood, all the real estate signs and how they appealed to people, the different ways that they called out to people to sort of say, look at me, and started thinking about, she had recently bought a home, this mm-hmm. was a new home herself, and about the relationship of home ownership and the American dream and how people desire to own a home. So she put the sign up, build your dream, with a bed on it. She had a real estate sign made in her front yard and used that as a conversation point with neighbors about the American dream. And so they're right there that you're building community.
Yeah, and the idea is that the work of art is not necessarily the sign. It's the conversations that emerge.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What kinds of interest have you heard from, I mean, have you been surprised at the people who wanted to take part in this?
Yeah, it's been really exciting. So how it began was, so we have this website, and you can go on the website and you can find projects from around the world. And not only can you read about these projects and see images of the projects and read about the artists who are doing this work, you can also, there's a link called Participate. So you can actually figure out, there maybe it's a blueprint for how you reproduce this kind of project in your own community, or maybe there's a way for you to actually engage with the piece itself. So the next initiative after that was to actually produce something. And we produced a couple small projects last year, one in the Czech Republic. We helped produce part of a summer camp, and one summer camp for youth that addressed ecological issues. And then we did a mapping project in Boston where we actually mapped social practice projects around the world. And I had the idea to create take the content off of the web and put it into a city. And it really felt like Dallas was ready for that because it's changing in so many ways in the last few years. There's artists who are doing more social practice projects locally. The institutions are starting to open up to the projects. There's urban farming going along all over the, even if you look at Cynthia McColhey, who had McColhey Modern for many years, one of the outstanding galleries in the city, closed her gallery and is now doing projects, did 1,700 seeds last year, which was a field of sunflowers, 1,700 sunflowers in Oak Cliff. That really was another gesture of outreach to the community. So I wanted to do that kind of thing, and Dallas was the place to start it.
Janiel Engelstad is here. She's an artist, curator, and founding director of Make Art with Purpose. MAP 2013 is a festival and exhibition that will take place at various locations in North Texas through November 24th. You can find out more information on the Think page of KERA.org. If you'd like to join the conversation or ask a question, call us. The number is 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@KERA.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. With more than 40 classes starting in October, from landscape painting to intelligent investing on the Dallas and Plano campuses, smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with artist and curator Janiel Engelstad, founding director of Make Art with Purpose. MAP 2013 is a festival and exhibition taking place at various locations in North Texas through November 24th. You can find a link to more information on the Think page of KERA.org. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@KERA.org. So, Janiel, what is the lasting local impact that you'd like to see from something like MAP 2013?
One thing to kind of preface that is, so MAP isn't about, it's bringing in a bunch of artists and having an exhibition from the outside. So to start this, I invited a few artists whose ideas could engage an issue that was important here or engage a community or an institution in a way that would start a conversation that might not otherwise happen. So that's one of the things that leads to an impact that I hope is lasting, is that conversations were started that would not otherwise have happened. And then once you start building these relationships, you have that first project and then the second, and then all of a sudden you've got, you know, dozens. But along the way, it's ignited local artists to come up with ideas and have contacted me and say, hey, I'd like to be a part of this. I have an idea or there's something I've wanted to do that I've never had a platform to do it with. And so then we start to work together and develop that idea. And then that generates community and action, agency within that artist that wasn't here before. And that can impact the city in such a vibrant way.
Do you find that a lot of artists working locally do have that sort of project that they've always thought about doing but couldn't find a place for it? I mean, is that a common thing for artists to have the dream project that for whatever reason hasn't seemed to work in the community until now?
Well, I think that's true of maybe artists who aren't in the 1% of, you know, aren't selling. And I mean, they always have a project, and to realize that it takes time and money. And artists who are working artists have, you know, jobs often that take a lot of time, and so they don't have the flexibility as a full-time studio artist. So that grows across all kinds of art forms, whether it's theater or performing arts or visual arts or social practice.
Your budget for this is relatively modest. Mm-hmm. Talk about the challenges of raising money for this and how that money gets spent.
Well, funding, grant writing and funding is challenging always. So it's how I've produced this work for over two decades. And it's making your case in a way that people believe in you and believe what you're going to do. And I've been really, I'm very grateful for the local foundations and partners who have contributed to this. One thing that I've done to make this successful is create a funding model that not only includes grants from local companies and foundations such as Embry Family Foundation and Neiman Marcus, but also all of the partners are each contributing time and energy and ideas, which have a lot of value, as well as capital. And then the artists themselves come in with grants, or they come in with their expertise and their time and their energy. So together, we pool all these resources and create something.
Have we created in our society or in our time a false dichotomy between that which is considered art and everything else that is the product of human creativity?
Yes and no. I think that when you're looking at a Picasso, you know that's art. Mm-hmm. And you know that there's something that's intrinsically happening in that work that sets it apart in this thing we call art. That might be different than looking at this microphone I'm looking at right now, although it's a work of design, fine design, so maybe that's not the best example. But at the same time, there's art in life, and life is art, and that is part of the philosophy of what we do. So I think that there's a subtle, there is this thing, art, but there's also these subtle connections that integrate into all of our lives.
I guess this project also helps to cultivate an audience for art that maybe hadn't realized that they were welcome at the table before.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the project I talked about earlier at the Dallas Museum of Art, where a lot of the participants who helped to create this new guide to pieces in the museum in Spanish hadn't been in the museum before. And then once they get there, they realize that they are welcome, that there's museum staff that are excited to see them, that are having conversations with them, that are helping them to kind of decontextualize the work and make it their own.
You know, it's interesting, Janelle, because museum folks in some ways are like librarians. People are afraid to bother them, and yet mm-hmm. they will bend over backwards, and they want everybody in the doors. Is there some mistake that's been made, though, on the part of these institutions that for years have made efforts, some more successful than others, to bring everybody in, but those efforts, for whatever reason, sometimes seem to fall short?
No, I don't think so. I think that it's generally been a good experience. If I think back to when in the late 80s, early 90s, I was living in New York, and it's when the Metropolitan Museum of Art started opening late at night, and they were the first museum to really do, one of the first museums in the country to do this. Mm. They had Thursday nights, as free and as a student, that was my time to go, because there was, as you know, I could go for free, and they had music and they had, you know, really inexpensive food and wine available, and you really felt the vibrancy of the community in there. That you felt, it felt different than it did on a weekend. It just somehow felt, it looked different, first of all. You know, that you had people from all over the city coming in, and they had different clothes on, and they were different colors, and they had spoke different languages, and it was a real sense of being in on something that was at that time really special. And I think how that's expanded into family days and the kind of outreach that museums have done, which can be argued also as a smart business model, that they need to do this because they need to increase their numbers for business reasons, at the same time has had so many positive benefits in building bridges.
Have you found that community participants, whether here in North Texas or in other parts of the world, do they find that by taking part in this sort of social practice, that they are introduced to new ways of seeing the things that have been all around them for a long time?
Yes, I do. And that, again, has already been happening with MAP, with mm-hmm. the fact that they can sit down and have a conversation as a group led by an artist who takes them through an exercise, and then all of a sudden they're expanding their thinking.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also reach us via email to think@kera.org. The interesting thing about your project, another thing about MAP 2013, is that it's a departure from the idea that art is just entertainment. And I don't say just in a dismissive way, but it is exclusively entertainment. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Yeah, it is. There's really purpose, and that's you know, the make art with purpose. It means with intention. It doesn't mean like that. It doesn't negate traditional art, sculpture, painting, drawing, what have you, because mm-hmm. those are really valuable. And you can have a life-changing experience from that. In
sure.
fact, it's happened to me. You can look at a painting and walk away and you're never the same, or go to an exhibition of somebody's work and come out of that and it's changed you. So I don't want to negate that at all. I think it's very valuable, and I think it's a poetic part of our humanity. But at the same time, there's something else happening, that to engage issues, artists have a body of knowledge and artists have experiences that are really valuable. We have to make choices and decisions, and we have ways of thinking and experience that if you bring those to the table along with people who are working out of whether it's economics or science or NGOs or governments who are trying to find solutions to problems, bringing artists as a part of those decision makers, as people who have something to contribute to public policy, you can move things along in ways that you might not be able to move them along without that artist at the table. And that, I think, is really key as we move forward as a society, for artists to step up, first of all, who are interested in this kind of work. And second of all, that a place be made for the artists to collaborate and engage together so that we can start to solve some of these problems.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Frank in Fort Worth. Hi, Frank.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I was just curious, this is a very interesting topic, and I last year, I think I read in Newsweek, well, it mentioned several, but I guess the biggest one was an online social art network called DeviantArt. And I was wondering if you've done anything with any of them, or if there's, if there's maybe any plans, because I read recently, like that one had 23 million members that were, I guess, all artists at varying degrees.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the name of the organization.
I think you said, was it DeviantArt, there, Frank?
There's several, yeah, but I saw an article on DeviantArt last year, and I was amazed at the size and the scope.
Well, maybe you know of similar sort of online gatherings, or we can move on if that doesn't strike a bell?
Well, there's definitely, this is not, my MAP's not in isolation. In New York, Creative Time has, Creative Time is a funding organization that helps artists produce these projects on a large scale. And they have a daily or monthly news articles on their website, and many artists participate in that. I don't know if he's referring to perhaps there's a lot of networks now that artists belong to that they can sell their work through. And it's really driven a lot of, some of it's driven from the artist, and some of it's driven from someone who has seen the potential of the marketplace to have the internet be a place where you can buy art online.
So this festival is called MAP 2013. Does that imply MAP 2014 and MAP 2015 in the future?
It's designed to be a triennial, so it implies MAP 2016. And the idea is that the next location will be outside of the United States, and that it will respond to something locally wherever that is produced. And that those there's seeds being planted for that now in different places. And that's definitely what's happened here in Dallas. Is I came in with, I came in with this framework, but a lot of the conversations, I never had any idea they would take place, or these projects that developed really grew out of the what people wanted to do here. And so you come in with an idea, and it's been really lovely how people have responded and found a means to make something happen that wouldn't have be here otherwise.
It's got to be a delicate balance for you to run this thing, but also stay flexible enough and open enough to other people's ideas to allow them to maybe shift what you had intended.
Yeah, and for me, that's my practice, because I really see the production of this project as my creative practice. So I left the studio and went and started to make these projects. And now I've almost left project making, or at least in this case, and now and stepping back another step. But I see this MAP 2013, the overall thing, as my creative practice. And at my heart, I'm a collaborator. And I think that I know that I can accomplish things in collaboration, and by listening and expanding my own thinking and ideas that I could never do alone. And that is a key part of the philosophy of MAP.
Janiel Engelstad is an artist, curator, and founding director of Make Art with Purpose, which is an exhibition and festival that will take place at various locations in North Texas through November 24th. Janiel will also appear as a panelist at State of the Arts tomorrow evening at the Dallas Museum of Art. That conversation will be moderated by our own Jeff Whittington. You can find information about it on the Think page of KERA.org. Janiel, it's been such a pleasure to have you in today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer, and Christine McConnell prepares our podcast. The executive producer is Jeff Whittington. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Chris Boyd Think, and you can contact us via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.